Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Today we'll jump from Penny Lane to Avenue Q to Triad Stage, all in 30 minutes, and we'll have some fun along the way. The original cast of Broadway's Beatlemania singing all your Fab Four faves, like Yesterday, I Am the Walrus, All You Need Is Love, and all backed up by an entire symphony orchestra. No, it's not too good to be true, and it's coming to you live courtesy of the Winston-Salem Symphony. Then everybody loves a great Broadway show, and who doesn't love Muppets? Well, Winston-Salem Theater Alliance brings us the best of both worlds with the hilarious musical Avenue Q. And he was one of the best Southern writers of his generation, winning the William Faulkner Award, and his trilogy play New Music comes to the Triad this weekend thanks to Triad Stage in Greensboro. Celebrating North Carolinian Reynolds Price, waltzing down Abbey Road, and adult puppet theater next on Triad Arts Weekend. Roll up for the Classical Mystery Tour with the Winston-Salem Symphony and members of the original cast of Broadway's Beatlemania, live in concert. It's one night only, Saturday, February 18th at 7:30 in R.J. Reynolds Memorial Auditorium in Winston-Salem. With Winston-Salem Symphony Associate Conductor Matthew Troy on the podium, it'll be Fab Four hit after Fab Four hit all night long. And you don't want to wait to get your tickets either, with only a few tickets remaining in Tier 1. For ticket information and more, go to our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. And stay tuned for my conversation with Matt and Winston-Salem Symphony Music Director Robert Moody. They dropped by WFDD last week to help me figure out the method behind Beatlemania. Matt, I've got to confess up front, I never got the Beatles when I was supposed to. I didn't get them in junior high school or college. But about 10 years ago, I started listening to Beatles and really listening to the lyrics and the songs and the melodies. And, okay, I'm a believer now.
Well,
and you're bringing it here.
You and
Triad.
I have that in common then.
Oh, really?
Because the Beatles were before my time, so I came to them about 10 years ago also. So we were learning the Beatles at the same time. So,
okay. So you're becoming a junkie yourself?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, this Beatles concert, it helps the symphony this year. As part of our pop series, we're focusing really on rock music and just the importance of that. It obviously has a huge following here in this area. We opened the season with a tribute to the rock band Queen. Now we focus on the Beatles later this year. Bob Moody's going to be conducting a tribute to the 80s.
So you're getting orchestral arrangements of Beatles classics?
We actually have joining us the group called Classical Mystery Tour, and these were the four guys that were on the Broadway production of Beatlemania. That's going to be the front band. The symphony will be backing them up. And so what's really great about these arrangements and these charts is that pretty much whatever you hear on the Beatles albums is exactly what you'll hear in the concert. So if you hear the famous trumpet solo from Penny Lane, you're going to hear the Winston-Salem Symphony's first trumpet playing that solo. When you think of Eleanor Rigby and the great string section on the recording of the Beatles album, you're going to hear the string section of the Winston-Salem Symphony playing that. So it's going to be a fantastic, one-of-a-kind experience.
And speaking of one-of-a-kind, it's not often that Anita gets to break out, Anita Servo gets to break out her piccolo trumpet for Pops.
That's exactly right.
One of the things that strikes me about Beatles tunes, just from an orchestrational perspective, so much variety of color and texture.
That's right. And we're really doing, you know, Beatles songs from all the way back at the beginning to some of the later stuff that they did. And so just really covering, you know, the whole catalog of Beatles music with all of the favorites. Yesterday, A Hard Day's Night, Hey Jude, Yellow Submarine, all of the favorites. It's going to be, you know, an incredible show.
The concert does kind of move the Beatles chronologically.
That's right.
So they start out like as the 1964 Ed Sullivan Show Beatles, the matching suits, the thin dark ties. Then they sort of go off and make costume change. They come back as the Sgt. Pepper era Beatles, and they're in those Sgt. Pepper costumes. They then come back after intermission in much more like the Abbey Road kind of hippie Beatles, even towards White Album. And then finally, John Lennon even comes back in like the full white, his first album when he did Imagine right after the Beatles broke up. So they moved the whole era, even just to barely post-Beatles when the guys started separating. And the more they move forward, the more orchestral their stuff gets. It goes from being kind of four-man band more Elvis rock and roll.
Three chord songs.
To the craziness of I Am the Walrus, to the almost neoclassical writing of Eleanor Rigby and this Baroque trumpet that shows up in Penny Lane.
Bum, da bum, ba ba bum. So Penny Lane is just one of those examples. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall when they're in the studio trying to map out these tunes and how it's going to work. Penny Lane's another one of those tunes. It's just not the same without the orchestration.
That's right, and you just hear this fantastic trumpet solo, and you know a lot of trumpet players are used to playing some of the hardest solos in the orchestral repertoire, but you know, even this Beatles song, Penny Lane, has got quite a feat for most trumpet players to take on.
Penny Lane!
So this isn't just a Beatles Pops concert. This is a Beatles extravaganza.
Exactly.
That's what this is. Well, that sounds great.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be.
So yesterday, classic to one of the most gorgeous melodies, and then in come the strings.
That's right. I mean, just the beautiful warmth of the sound of the string section. Really, you know, again, hearing it live, there's nothing like it.
Had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something.
I Am the Walrus was one of those tunes that you could spend a lot of time trying to figure out the lyrics. Not necessarily important in this case, because it's just great music.
That's right.
And really unusual orchestration.
That's right. And I think this piece really just shows the kind of the depth of musicians that the members of the Beatles were, to see that progression from the early days and to see how much things develop over time into something like this.
Interesting how these guys, I mean, they became really interested in, like, I know sitar was one obsession from one of the guys. World percussion stuff from Ringo. They're unusual in that sense. They were kind of ahead of the game in a lot of ways.
I think very forward-looking, really advanced harmonically, really advanced in the way that their melodies work. So I think, you know, just from a compositional standpoint, just some really, you know, incredible music.
All we need is love.
All you need is love. I mean, what could be a better song than that to close, you know, just uses the entire orchestra. You know, hopefully at that point the audience will even be singing along.
I was just going to ask, there's got to be a sing-along component to these.
I'm
Everybody
sure
knows these tunes. Great.
Nothing you can sing that can't be sung. Nothing you can say, but you can learn how to play the game. It's easy. Nothing you can make that can't be made. No one you can save that can't be saved.
My thanks to Winston-Salem Symphony Associate Conductor Matthew Troy and Music Director Robert Moody. They both invite you to roll up for the Classical Mystery Tour with the Winston-Salem Symphony and members of the original cast of Broadway's Beatlemania live in concert. It'll be one night only, Saturday, February 18th at 7:30 in R.J. Reynolds Memorial Auditorium, and it's sure to be a concert you won't soon forget. Tickets are selling fast with just a few seats left in Tier 1, and you'll find links to ticket information and more on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. You're listening to Triad Arts Weekend on 88.5 WFDD, your NPR News and Triad Arts station. I'm David Ford. Avenue Q by Robert Lopez and Jeff Marx is one of the longest-running shows in Broadway history, and it's also one of the most unusual. The show of actors and puppet characters acting, singing, and dancing side by side draws a lot of inspiration from Sesame Street, with three of the puppet characters being parodies of Bert and Ernie and the Cookie Monster. In the case of Avenue Q, though, that safe place for learning is primarily adult learning. Trekkie Monster's obsession is, let's just say, decidedly not baked goods. Characters face real-world problems. There's some profanity in the dialogue and lyrics as the characters struggle to deal with things like racism, homosexuality, and pornography. And yes, there are episodes of full puppet nudity. Avenue Q is for mature audiences only, and it's hilarious, packed with great music, and coming to the Winston-Salem Theater Alliance February 17th through March 4th. There'll be evening performances at 8 and weekend matinees at 2 o'clock at the Theater Alliance, and you'll find links to ticket information and more at wfdd.org/triadarts. Actors Jay Pierce, who's also puppet Kate Monster and Lucy T. Slut, Ken Ashford, who plays Brian, and Dave Wills, who plays puppets Trekkie Monster and Nikki, stop by WFDD to talk about it. Here's part 2 of our interview. I feel a little uncomfortable, Dave, I must say, talking right in front of Trekkie as if he's not here, and he is here. Trekkie, what's it like up in that cold, dark room, just you and your pornography? Are you truly a tortured soul?
Well, when me little, I would go to school, and the other kids, they would... Sorry, this is kind of hard to talk about.
No, hey, I don't want to make you uncomfortable, Trekkie.
Oh, well, it's important to talk about. So they would pull at me fur and make fun of me, and, well... The girls on the computer screen, they never do that. Plus, if you didn't know, there's a lot of money involved with pornography. And, well, maybe that could come in handy sometime.
Good point. Good point. Well taken. and as I love the way the... and again, I'm just reading through the plot and then they're inserting these song titles, but the setup for... Well, everyone's a little bit racist. You know, there are morals within this, but it's not heavy-handed.
No, yes, that's a great song that I think kind of is a good example of what this show does. The setup for it is Kate Monster and Trekkie Monster are the two monsters in the show, and they're kind of second-class citizens. Monsters aren't considered as the same as people to a lot of people. And so Kate confronts Princeton on that and says, you know, I think you're racist. And he turns around and says, well, I think you're racist. Are you going to let people come to that school? And she says, no, only monsters can come. And so they realize, oh, maybe they're both racist. And they go down the line and find out the black character, the Gary Coleman character in the cast, has some racist tendencies. And Brian is married to an Asian woman who comes out and says she's the most racist out of everybody. And it's just a very humorous take and also a way of acknowledging nobody's perfect and nobody's innocent of judging.
The funny thing about that song is I'm sure on Sesame Street they probably have songs about racism. And the lesson from the Sesame Street version is, you know, don't be racist. This is sort of a non-PC version, which is saying, hey, look, we're all a little bit racist and it's okay. I mean, let's not be mean to each other, but let's just acknowledge that we're all a little bit racist. And if we all acknowledge that, maybe we can all get along. It's sort of a skewed way of looking at it. And I don't think you could get away with saying something like that in an auditorium. But because it's delivered by puppets and people in this safe setting that we were talking about, it comes across as sort of, yeah, okay, all right, everyone's a little bit racist. Big deal.
Look at these puppets, and they're just gorgeous. Who made them, and was it just specific to this show?
Yes. A lot of theater companies rent the puppets from the people who own the rights, in this case MTI. We were actually able to contract with Joseph Lapina, who is a professor over at School of the Arts, and he has been making every single puppet for us, which is a huge undertaking. These require a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of effort, and he is making them completely originally, based loosely on the original Broadway cast, but with our own spin on them and our own look that he's designing. And we're just so thrilled about how they've turned out and how they work and how they feel. And
yeah, they look like they just came right out of the Muppet movie in terms of quality. They're just spot on.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, Dave, how do you develop a voice for Trekkie and the other characters? And I understand you do more than one voice.
Well, the Trekkie character was a little easier to develop because it is so distinctive. It literally is the Cookie Monster voice. What I did was, you know, prior to the auditions for the show, I just kind of practiced singing songs that Cookie Monster would sing, like, you know, C is for cookie, you know, that kind of thing, and just kind of really get a gruffness in my voice. And I had to learn kind of how to not use my throat too much, but use more of my diaphragm for that, because having that gruffness can really wreck your voice if you're not careful. So that just took a lot of practice in, like, mimicking Cookie Monster. As for Nikki, Rod and Nikki is based on Bert and Ernie, and so Nikki is based on Ernie's character. And so kind of listening to him, but also, you know, Kermit the Frog kind of has that same kind of feel to his voice a little bit, kind of a nasally, kind of in the back of your throat, you know, oh, hi there, you know, that kind of thing. And just kind of really practicing with it and just letting other people listen to it and giving me, you know, pointers and feedback and things like that, and just talking in that voice as much as possible.
In creating the voices for me, I started with the songs, and we worked with our music director early on, and he was real helpful in kind of helping me find the voices for the songs. And then I kind of worked the speaking voice from there and trying to come up with two distinct female voices for the two distinct characters just, again, requires a lot of time. But you have to also work in the singing part as well, making sure whatever voice you come up with, you can also sing and sing a lot.
Yeah, I didn't consider that. I mean, you mentioned this idea of having to use your diaphragm, otherwise you're going to fry your voice. I mean, I can imagine that must be, that's a real concern. You use your voice the wrong way, you've only got one. I mean, that's tough. How long did it take to be able to get over that hump and not put so much strain on your voice?
Dennis Raley, our music director, has been, from the very, very start, real firm and encouraging about making sure we're singing appropriately and safely. Even the human actors who aren't doing the puppet voices, some of them have some interesting character voices they're using as well. So he's been really good about teaching us how to sing up and use our breath correctly and not hurt ourselves. So that's been great to have that guidance there all along as well.
We got to hear extensive commentary from Trekkie, but very little from Kate Monster or from Lucy T. Slutt. I'm going to put it to you, Kate Monster. Is it tough having a last name Monster?
Well, it can be, depending on what kind of people you encounter. Some people really have a hard time seeing past the fur. But there's a lot of people out there who don't even seem to notice it. So I have a pretty good time. I have a nice job, and I really want to do a lot in my life, and I don't think being a monster is going to stand in my way.
A go-getter. Like to hear that, Kate. Good for
Thanks.
You. Part two of my interview with Winston-Salem Theater Alliance actors Jay Pierce, Ken Ashford, and Dave Wills. They're three of the puppets and actors behind Avenue Q. The show is for mature audiences and opens Friday night, February 17th at 8, and will run through March 4th at the Theater Alliance in Winston-Salem, with evening performances at 8 and weekend matinees at 2. You'll find links to ticket information and more at wufdd.org/triadarts. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. And when we come back from this short break, it's a chat from the director's chair with Triad stage director Preston Lane. It's part of a month-long celebration honoring North Carolina native Reynolds Price and his work. We'll talk about his trilogy, New Music, next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Reynolds Price's trilogy, New Music, comes to the Triad for a once-in-a-lifetime theatrical event at Triad Stage in Greensboro. Opening night for Part 1, August Snow and Night Dance, is Friday, February 17th at 7:30 at Triad Stage, 232 South Elm Street, and it runs through March 17th. Opening night for New Music Part 2, Better Days, will be Saturday, February 25th at 7:30. The novel solidified Price's emergence as among the best Southern writers of his generation, receiving the William Faulkner Award. And he would go on to teach English at Duke University for more than 50 years and to pen more than 40 novels, plays, and collections of poetry and short stories. Last week, Triad Stage director Preston Lane and actor Leah Turley spoke with me by phone in between rehearsals from Greensboro.
The story follows the struggle of what it means to grow up, to build a family, to make community, to find a home, over the course of 30 years. So in the three plays, we really see sort of after the first year of marriage, about 9 years later, and then 30 years after that, when their son has gone off to fight in Vietnam. And it's paralleled sort of with the struggle of America growing up in the 20th century as well.
Two different casts for this, four decades covered. Some pretty ambitious stuff, but you, in the past, you've bitten off big chunks of history. What's the draw for you in that sort of scope?
I think that theater can do something that film and television really can't do. It can present the epic on a very human scale. Certainly, film and television can show us grand, sweeping battles and stories that have a visual sweep. But in the theater, we require you to have the imagination to accept that. And I think in a play like this, plays that I love that deal with history and time, we're challenged continually to meet the material and to imagine the world that's being created.
And Leah, what's your role in this?
I play Genevieve Slappy in part one and Virginia Wilson in part two.
Switching roles like that, have you ever had a moment where you're drifting back? Oh no, I'm not that character, I'm this character?
In the earlier parts, it was definitely difficult to understand who I was, in what space I was in, who I was interacting with, because we did move so quickly from one show to the next. But really, like I said, you know, the more that I pay attention to where I am and who I'm with, the easier it becomes. Really, I think it's about living within those spaces and with those people.
Her love interest is played by the same actor in both plays, but a different character. So it was always fun in rehearsal to sort of be like, who's she in love with now? Oh, the same guy, but different.
A play of this type with so many moving parts, so much history being covered. To make it work, it's got to get down to the writing. Leah, what are some trademarks of Reynolds Price, the playwright?
I think his language, the way that he paints and constructs ideas. His ideas come from very well-constructed language. So he paints pictures with words, I think somewhat similar to the way Tennessee Williams does. And at times, you know, as an actor, it becomes a challenge to take this what seems like very flowery language and make it human interaction.
There's kind of poetic language involved.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the challenges that modern actors face with this kind of work, is that we don't speak the same way that we did in the past. But it's more of a coming back to your roots than anything else and remembering how important language is and how it affects us and how we communicate. And I think Reynolds Price does that in such a beautiful way.
Could you give me an example, Leah, of a line that sticks with you?
Sure. In a scene I have with Tall Avery, who's played by Jenny Myers Leakes, I say that my parents were as happy as any two ducks on a deep, warm pond.
There's an image.
He paints some visual imagery that is so commonplace. Two ducks on a pond. But when you paint it that way and say that that's how happy they were as a couple, I think that it just brings to light maybe a different kind of imagery for us.
That does speak to a level of genius.
Absolutely.
I think the language, but also in Reynolds Price's work and in the work of, I think, great writers, there's also what's left unsaid, what isn't communicated in the language, and the subtext of these plays that is so rich in the interaction of these characters and their hopes and dreams, their desires. Because really, this play on the surface doesn't seem to be about all that much. A man growing up in a small southern town over four decades, his life is not that eventful in the grand course of world history. And yet it is enormously eventful in the loves that he has experienced and the lives that he has created and the people he has touched.
Anytime you focus on the interaction between individuals, I don't know, just set something off creatively in the listener when it's done well.
Yes. The demands that are made on a listener in a great theater production of a great writer surpasses, I think, the demands that any other art form really asks of us. It asks us to be an equal participant in the creative process. I always say to the actors as we get close to allowing an audience in that there's been a character that we just haven't had be a part of our rehearsals who's going to be joining us, because every audience changes a play.
Well, that's a great way of putting that. Leah, talk about that ebb and flow as an actor. And are you aware of that from the moment you take stage, or does that develop over the course of an act or a scene or a play?
I think it becomes a very specific relationship between an actor and an audience. Theater provides an experience. This moment, this time, right now, will never be duplicated again. We may do the exact same play tomorrow night, but it will be significantly different just because of the variable of our audience. There are certain jokes that they're going to laugh at that the next audience is not going to find funny. There are things that they're going to be moved by that someone else could find differently. And, you know, I think just responding as my character in that moment to whatever is happening with me and the audience and the actors on stage so that we can create a unique experience every single night and it never gets stale. We try to keep that electricity throughout so that each audience gets, you know, you're going to get what you pay for.
You get a new actor up on stage every night. That's great.
It's true, yeah.
What kind of guy was Reynolds Price?
I hadn't really had a one-on-one meeting until he showed up the day that he saw the play. And I was really kind of terrified that he might hate it, that I would have offended him in some changes I might have made to some of his very poetic stage directions. He was going to speak after the play, and I went down to introduce him, and I asked Rich where he was. And Rich told me that Reynolds Price needed time to collect himself, and he had gone to sort of the side bomb exit to the theater, and he was weeping. He was so touched by the production. And he came back and said it was the best production of August Snow he'd ever seen. He lifted himself up from his wheelchair to give his version of a standing ovation, and just was so wonderfully generous in his praise for the production. He came back several times and got to know many of the actors well, took them out for dinner, always called them by their character name, and was very, very much a part of the company during that show.
Triad Stage director Preston Lane and actor Leah Turley. The trilogy New Music by the late, great North Carolina writer and educator Reynolds Price is coming to Triad Stage, beginning with opening night for Part 1, August Snow and Night Dance, on Friday, February 17th at 7:30 at Triad Stage, 232 South Elm Street. Opening night for New Music Part 2, Better Days, will be Saturday night, February 25th at 7:30. New Music is also part of the Greensboro Public Library's One City, One Author program, with a month-long celebration of over two dozen events honoring North Carolina native Reynolds Price and his work. Triad Stage will play host to some of these free events, including a poetry reading on April 10th titled Toasts for Reynolds with Vic Strandberg. You'll find links to ticket information and more at wfdd.org/triadarts. Well, that's all for today's program. Please send your questions, comments, and suggestions to triadarts@wfu.edu. You'll find podcasts and archive programs on our website, wfdd.org/triadarts. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening to Triad Arts Weekend.